There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And another hour of great live local talk. And on Tuesdays, we do this. We talk with from the Mobile County Health Department, who is extremely busy doing these vaccination events. But we appreciate Dr. Scott Chavers joining us for some discussion this hour. Your chance to ask questions at 343-0106. Dr. Chavers, good to talk to you.
Hey, Sean. Good to be on today.
Y'all have, so you had an event yesterday. Kind of roll out for Mobile County Health Department what your schedule is this week on vaccinations.
Yep. So, you know, when the eligibility changed last week on the 22nd, we really, you know, put forward a strategy to push as many vaccines as we could, you know, last week and this week. So hit a single day record yet last week for us. And then this week, we've departed from our normal schedule. And we're putting in place a schedule to go Monday through Friday, starting at 8 o'clock today. We're running through 4 o'clock tomorrow. On Wednesday, we're going 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. So, again, want to give individuals an opportunity that you know, are working till 5 and can't get to us during the traditional clinic hours a chance to come in to be vaccinated. Then on Thursday, we're going to go from noon until 8. We didn't open quite as early on Thursday just to give our staff a chance to breathe. And then Friday, on Good Friday, we're going to go 8 to 4 again. So just want to try to give everyone an opportunity to be vaccinated because the vaccines are here now. It's not like it was a couple of weeks ago where we were turning over rocks to try to find them. And we are going to stand up clinics every day through the end of April at some location. And when I say every day, Monday through Friday is the core. There will be a couple of Saturday events. But we really want to push to get as many people vaccinated that want to be vaccinated as possible by the end of April.
Is I saw a story about y'all got a new I don't know if it's a you know super Yeti cooler or what, but y'all got a new way to keep vaccine cold.
We did, and so actually way back in November when you know, the vaccines were becoming a reality, we ordered one of these ultra low temperature freezers so that we could store a large volume of the Pfizer vaccine. So I think the thing can hold like 240,000 doses. It's unreal. So we do have that. And then we have a transport cooler that also keeps Pfizer at ultra-low temp so we can take it to the cruise terminal or we can take it up to Calvert or, you know, some of the big industrial plants to vaccinate their workers.
That was an issue before, right? Is moving. I mean, number one, holding it, but number two, moving it to some of these locations that aren't right there by the offices.
Exactly. If you can't maintain that cold chain around the vaccine, it starts to break down, and because it's based on messenger RNA, which breaks down very, very fast, there was a lot of focus on how to move it from place to place safely.
Before we got a lot of questions coming in here, but I want to go through what y'all put out for the characteristics of COVID-19 patients. And we've been looking at this through the months here, through the weeks, and then on to months. Have you seen change? Because I'm looking at this latest report, and more female than male, cases of COVID, or, you know, on this latest report. Have you seen that change? Because weren't we early on, wasn't it worried more for men than women? Or am I remembering that correctly?
Well, early on, there were small numbers, and some of that fluctuated quite a bit. You have to remember that the way cases are counted, it's by self-selection into testing. And so females across the board tend to seek out medical care quicker than males, tend to go for testing better than us males, and just tend to take care of themselves better than males. So that's why it looks a bit more elevated in females than it is males. But there isn't a self-selection based on the virus that has a preference for females.
Is there any data that shows males compelled to get the test by the females? Leave it at that.
No, but there may be some data that I haven't seen around weekend jaunts and that type of thing where you start to feel guilty on Monday morning and decide to go get tested.
Very good. And I saw the age range. This is something a month ago or something you brought up, that the 25-49, that age demographic, is actually leading the number of COVID cases. It's not 50-plus, not 65-plus, it's 25-49.
Exactly. And so we're specifically talking about cases, not mortality or hospitalization.
Yeah, people testing positive, right.
Yeah, so what we're talking really about is risk behavior. And so you're in that age group. I remember when I was in that age group, I would discount things and think it didn't apply to me. And so that's the age group that's more likely to go out, more likely to socialize, you know, more likely to be looking for partners, that type of thing. And those are behaviors that fit into the transmission of COVID or any other infectious disease.
I mean, so there's a part of this, as you look at numbers and cases and all that, it's, there's a medical side of it, but there seems to be, I mean, there's sociology to some degree, right? I mean, of why people, it's not that they're more susceptible, but they just, behaviors may put them in places where they have a better chance of getting it.
Oh, absolutely. So this is what we call risk-taking behavior. And, you know, the younger you are, particularly, you know, 18-year-old males, you look at that demographic and risk-taking behavior, you know, that's a big spike in a lot of areas. And it's just because of the things we do. So social behavior and behavior in general do drive a lot of health concepts. And for infectious diseases, population mixing, which comes back down to social behavior, is one of the benchmarks of that risk activity that will drive epidemics and pandemics.
Yeah, see the stat here in a very small, the smallest of the graphs here for age group 0 to 4. Last week, you and I talked a little bit about this, the vaccine development for children, and you talked about the process in that. When do you start seeing, because you've talked about the 18 or 16 and those limits here because of testing, when do you see, will there be a children's vaccine out, or will it just be the eligibility of another vaccine for children?
Well, I don't know if it will necessarily be a new vaccine. It's very likely to be Moderna or Pfizer here in the developed world. And what the process will be is to how to use these vaccines safely and effectively, because, you know, 0 to 4, or let's say up to about 13, you know, children are not just small adults. Their systems are different. And they're still developing in certain ways. And so you have to figure out, one, how to dose them, because you typically don't use the same dosage as you do for a full-grown adult. And you also want to look for these, what we call correlates of protective immunity, which is the antibodies, as an example, that we see in adults, wherein we know that the adult has immunity. We want to see how quickly we find those in kids based on the dose.
All right. So it's something that's coming. We just have, I mean, because this is novel and new, that information's not there.
Right. And to my knowledge, the studies are planned. So I know that the last clinical review protocol that I looked at, it looked like some of the studies from 5 years of age and up were either beginning or about to begin. And then when you go from the zero into the 0 to 4 range, you know, that's an additional level of complexity that really has to be studied before the clinical trials start.
Got a quick question before we run to the news break. Bob says, will we be able to request specific vaccine manufacturer when we show up for vaccination?
Yeah, I think it will depend on the availability because, you know, Moderna, Pfizer, we have both of them now. You know, so we're going to we're switching to Pfizer for our big clinics, and we're going to shift to Moderna for some of the areas that cannot handle the ultra low temp storage. And then the J&J vaccine is slowly trickling in, but as it's going, because it's still going to be critically limited, those vaccines are probably going to be staged in populations that are at high flight risk, meaning you don't think you're probably going to see them again.
Gotcha, because it's a one dose.
Correct.
All right, coming right back, more of our conversation with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department. Got questions? We'll get you answers. 343-0106. Got a stack of questions myself, and we'll get into them when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, text line, phone line, 343-0106. This very show, Midday Mobile. Glad y'all are here. Continue our conversation with Dr. Scott Chavers from the Mobile County Health Department. And grab this one from the text line. Fred said, have the vaccines, and we're talking about several in the last break, have the vaccines been approved by the FDA? Surely they're not experimental.
Exactly. So they have been approved under the emergency use authorization. And what that means is they were made available through a quicker process, bureaucratic process, than if I, you know, 3 or 4 years ago at J&J were taking a vaccine through the process. And just to give you an example, so the FDA requires every single medicine as of 2 years ago to have a pediatric component before they would go through their to get full approval. And obviously the way things were, the manufacturers didn't produce those packages. And so it was approved under very, very strong benefit to risk. So the benefit risk balance without any question was very, very clear for the advisory committees. But some of these other studies that typically have to be put in place for long term, and they are ongoing, just were not required under emergency use authorization.
Okay, so the bureaucracy out of it, but people will say this moves so quickly. You know, people talk about President Trump's Operation Warp Speed. It's given us the vaccine now. They said, well, they must have cut corners, right? I mean, if normally it takes this long, these vaccines get done so quickly, they couldn't have done the research that they did on whatever other vaccine.
Right. So if you look at the way that the clinical development is done on a vaccine, there's typically 3 to 5 years that are in place that's all preclinical and lab. Well, that process had already been in place since the late 1990s. So the technology was already there. So the concept that these are new vaccines is partially correct in that they were studied, you know, in March of last year, but the core technology has been around a long time.
Explain that for a second, because you've said that before. So that this is not, I mean, it's hard for us to understand. We're dealing with novel coronavirus, and then the vaccine, you're saying there's been elements of this around for a long time of this vaccine. Can you give it to me in Sullivanese, something I can understand?
Yeah, so the mechanism in which the genetic information is taken into the cell, you know, was developed a couple of decades ago, and had been in clinical trials for different therapeutics. And the clinical trials typically didn't have enough outcomes, meaning the pandemics went away quick, like in MERS. So the technology and how to deliver the genetic information has been around and very well grounded in terms of the science. So it really wasn't until there was this, and I'll use the word opportunity, but there really wasn't the opportunity to really deploy it against a pandemic until March of last year when SARS-CoV-2 became a circulating virus.
All right. So hopefully that answers some of these questions here. Now, with all that being said and the vaccine being available now, multiple different vaccines available, we hear a report yesterday from the CDC, fears over a fourth wave. So, Dr. Yep. Chavers, fourth wave.
Let me finish up real quick.
Okay.
So what Operation Warp Speed did, though, in the year, or actually, 10 months, to get the vaccine through, is it removed a lot of the bureaucratic stop gates. So when I would take a vaccine to market or any other drug to market, I would put a package together of data, go to FDA, I would submit it, they would come back 6 weeks later and say, well, we need more information, give it to them. Then I would have to go away. And 8 to 10 months later, up to a year later, they would call us back and say, okay, this is the next round of review. So all the clinical trial information on safety and efficacy around the three vaccines are available was completed and submitted, and Operation Warp Speed under President Trump removed those obstacles for review, meaning they would review within a matter of weeks as opposed to months. Or a year.
So that's
why we got it to market.
The waiting around, bureaucratic, it was taken out of it.
Yeah, drug development is hurry up and wait, just like in the military.
Well, I tell you what, I got about 2 minutes here for the break. I want to go back to Fred said, I understand the research has been going on for over 2 decades, and each time the results of those tests were made available to medical governing bodies, they were deemed not safe for humans, and nothing has changed. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I understand. Can you give some insight on that?
So in order for a clinical trial to be deemed successful, there has to be enough endpoint to show a difference. So it's a statistical measure. When you take it in, you have to show a statistically significant benefit over either standard of care or placebo. And the problem in the past was that none of these had enough statistical power to do that. It had nothing to do with safety, and none of these studies were ever closed down in the past because of safety. You'll see some of them put on hold to see if, based on what they're seeing, to see if it's causal. And at least for the three vaccines that are available, and even the AstraZeneca one, again, the benefits far outweigh the risk. And for the most part, what we're seeing is no AEs of significance are being deemed causal.
Okay, so I mean, this is, I think, what happens is you get pieces of information that they by themselves may be true, and they're put together, right? And then somebody can infer from that something that's not true, or at least has not been proven.
Right, it's just an incorrect deduction based on what they're seeing. And remember, a lot of the stuff is so heavily filtered down, you don't get the granularity to understand it. But if I tell you you need 1,200 people in a clinical trial and you do one with 200 and you don't see an outcome, it's because of the numbers. It's because of the statistical power. And that's a large bit of the problem when these clinical trials fail, is you just cannot reach the endpoints you're looking at.
Coming right back. More with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department, fourth wave, or CDC director, talking about that yesterday. We'll get some interpretation from Dr. Chavers next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department. Dr. Chavers, you were rolling out earlier your lineup for this week. A lot of opportunities for people to get the vaccine this week.
really, there are, again, big push tomorrow, and, well, a big push for the rest of the day. We're at the cruise terminal until 4 o'clock. You know, we would love to hit 1,000 vaccines today and have plenty of vaccinations go around. We have 5,000 vaccines we'd like to give this week. We'll be there 8 to 8 tomorrow, and then noon to 8 on Thursday, and then 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock on Friday, and trying to get home before the traffic gets bad going into the tunnel.
All right. And that information also, they go to the website or the Facebook page. Where can they grab that?
We do. We do have a website. It's mchdcares.com. You can get all the information on the upcoming clinics, second dose clinics, you know, and then when we're out in the community, we'll give you traffic maps about how the drive-thrus go. So really a wealth of information. And you can also submit questions through mchdcares.com, and we will answer your questions there as well.
All right. Your reaction, frontline on this, and yesterday, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Rochelle Walensky was had her presser there and warned of impending doom because of a fourth surge. I mean, you and I are talking about the number of vaccines going out, more vaccines than ever going out, but now we're hearing that there's another surge on the way. What's the reasoning behind this?
Well, part of the reasoning is that the level of vaccine coverage is still, you know, in the very best places, 20 to 25%. And that is well below the herd immunity threshold that we need to hit. The second thing that is concerning is as the numbers have continued to decrease coming off those highs that we saw at the end of the year, there's a false sense of security that COVID has in some way gone away, and we can start opening up, you know, cruise ships and festivals, and we can take the mask off, and we don't have to socially distance. And that's the concern. And the data behind that is if we look at states like Florida, like in some areas in the Midwest, that have really loosened up these mitigation activities, the cases have stopped plateauing and are going back up now. So that's part of the concern. The other concern is that we know now we have the variant first identified in the UK that is more transmissible and, you know, a little more lethal, about 30% more lethal than the original. And so if you feed that into the population, the other 75% of the population that has not been vaccinated, it's easy to get another spike. Now, I don't necessarily agree that this is a fourth wave. That, to me, has a very technical term around it. But it's possible that you're going to see the gains that we have made coming off December and really reducing all the metrics down to some very positive numbers, that we're going to lose that. And we're going to start increasing the background prevalence. And that's when we start to see these exponential spikes again.
Now, people, this goes back to the two things you're talking about, the number of people vaccinated, and I want to get into it for Alabama as well in a second. But this variant that you said is more contagious, right, so it can spread more easily and more lethal, is somebody who right now is vaccinated, who has gotten the vaccine, Moderna, Pfizer, J&J, whatever, are they vaccinated against the UK variant?
Yes. According to the studies done by Pfizer and Moderna, the changes in the spike protein, which is what the variation did, doesn't affect vaccine coverage. So you're still are going to have approximately the same amount of coverage with B.1.1.7, which is the one seen in the UK first, than you do the original. There's a little more question about what percentage of coverage that you may get out of South Africa. It's probably going to be lower, but still ample coverage, especially if we can get to herd immunity, and then the same way with the one coming out of Brazil.
Because I think that's a fear of a lot of people, too, that here, you know, get these vaccines, get a higher number up, and then well, each, and I'll use something that's probably not a good analog, but you know, the flu strain, right? Well, you got to get a new flu vaccine because we got a new flu strain out there. That would be a worry of a lot of folks, I imagine.
Right. And so the difference is the two proteins that are on the influenza virus are not very well conserved year after year, meaning they change a lot. There's not a lot of fidelity. But in the spike protein of the SARS viruses, those, although they will change, the virus actually self-corrects those in many occasions. And so you get more consistency in replication with the SARS viruses. That being said, one of the concerns is the more you let these viruses replicate, meaning, you know, we open up too soon and we go back to doing all the things that we used to do, that's going to encourage replication. And as the case rates go up, the probability that we are going to see more of these variants in place is also going to increase.
I mean, okay, how, as you get the mutations, the variations, how far does it have to get in variation to not be blocked by the vaccine now? Is it the brother level, cousin, second cousin, third cousin once removed? You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to put it in language I understand. How far out does it go before it that the vaccine doesn't block it?
Gotcha. So that's an interesting question. It's not really a question of second cousins, but it's more a question of time to considerable shifts. And in the UK, that looked to be about 3 months.
Okay.
So if you're in an upward trajectory, the likelihood that you're going to see, let's say, a B.1.1.7 variant is about 3 months if it has been seeded in the community.
I got to ask you this, too. As we talked about vaccination numbers, Dr. Chavers, stats out, and I don't even have them in front of me right now, but I know Alabama with the lowest per capita vaccination rate in the nation.
Yep.
So I guess that goes out of the medical side back to the sociology side. Anything, you know, anything that y'all are talking about on that?
Well, so, you know, if you look at it, for a long time, it was a problem with access to vaccine. That has gone away. So it's to the point where just about everyone now that wants to be vaccinated can be vaccinated. And the vaccines are there, especially in Mobile County, where we have all the hospitals. You know, you have us, Mobile County Health Departments. You've got pharmacies now. You've got CVS, Walmart, Sam's. So the access to vaccines are there. Now it becomes, do you want to be vaccinated? And the level of vaccine hesitancy, I think, that we're starting to see, because at the beginning, we really weren't worried about those that were vaccine hesitant. We were trying to get the 33% of the people who absolutely were militant about getting vaccine. Now I think we're moving into that vaccine hesitancy group, and I think that's where we need to educate better and get around a lot of these just untruths and myths and conspiracy theories that just are not true.
Okay, well, you have a chance to address a lot of people one time here. So somebody who is in that, I mean, somebody who's in the maybe, they're hesitant, they're not anti-vaccine, but they're not sure that this is the right time for them. What, in general, what do you tell them? I mean, if you're trying to make the case, right, you're in the elevator with somebody in 6 feet distance or whatever, 3 feet, and you're trying to make the case, and somebody says, you know, Dr. Chavers, I thought about it, but yeah, just, I don't really know. I mean, what do you tell them?
So the number one objective that I hear is the vaccines are too new, they're experimental, I don't want to be a guinea pig, you know, we don't know what's going to happen long term, and it's, you know, quite simple. They're not new. They've been around a while. They have been used in millions upon millions upon millions of people globally. The safety profile is one of the best vaccines we've ever seen, much better than the vaccines that we had as children, right? And long-term outcomes you know, are well understood with respect to how these vaccines work. These are not the types of drugs that are going to interfere with your genetic core and cause issues with pregnancy or sterility or lactation or growth or anything like that in terms of 5 or 6, 10 years down the road.
So, and there's, you kind of hit on some of the individual ideas people have or worried about it, but there is, there's a general sense that this, I mean, it's just like the virus, it's novel, it's new, and, you know, human beings often are hesitant on something that's new. People roll out a new product, a new idea, whatever. It takes a while to get people, you know, people on board.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's human nature to kind of wait and see what's going to happen. And what we are seeing in surveys is those that were vaccine hesitant are moving into the category of being accepting these vaccines, because they are seeing so many people that have been vaccinated and seeing that they're not having the adverse events and starting to lose the fear that has been built up. You know, it's interesting to me because I study history quite a bit around these types of things. And I think before social media and before the conspiracy theories and the echo chambers that you get into, you know, people back, you know, during polio and a lot of the vaccine preventable diseases of my childhood and my grandparents, you know, people were clamoring to get the vaccines and did not see this thing. And it's because the misinformation just, you know, was not there. So,
all right. We're going to get a couple more questions asked. This is your last call for questions for Dr. Chavers at 343-0106. We'll come right back after the news.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, some of that rain Dr. Bill was talking about this morning making its way at least through here, studios at Airport and 65. And you see the cold on the way by the end of the week? Bill Finch was in prepare yourself and your tomatoes for the cold mode on the Sunday show. If you did not catch Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch, remember, one of the 54 hours a week of live local programming we produce right here at our studios. Those hours of Bill Finch's show available in podcast form through the website or TuneIn Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Deezer. Listen, if there's a podcast platform out there, we're probably on it, and you can go grab that and listen to what Bill was saying about the cool down in temps and your vegetables out there. All right, continuing our conversation, Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department, right now down at the cruise terminal. It is a big week for vaccines. So y'all are there today till when?
Hey, we're there today until 4:00. We're going to be 8 to 8 tomorrow, noon to 8 on Thursday, and 8 to 4 on Friday. And we're off the wait. If you come off afternoon, it's typically drive in, park, walk in, and you're in and out in about 40 minutes. So quick process. And you can go to our website, mchdcares.com. Also some really exciting news that will be coming out in terms of where we're going to be in the community as we go forward. So coming out of the city of Mobile into outlying areas. So great place, great source of information.
And speaking of the vaccine, so several coming in here, questions on the text line, and this is something that's come up before, but let's readdress this. So Tommy says, how long after COVID, how long after COVID do I have to wait to get the vaccine? My doctor says at least 90 days.
Right. So if you're treated for COVID by monoclonal antibodies or convalescent plasma, you do have to wait 90 days. And that's because both of those treatments will wipe out the vaccine. So we do ask you to wait 90 days. But if you were infected and not treated with monoclonal antibodies or convalescent plasma, and as long as you're out of isolation, we vaccinate.
Speaking of which, this question, what happens if somebody gets the shot or vaccine and they could be positive for COVID-19, do they get a test before getting the shot?
No. Being infected does not put you into a position for not receiving a vaccine. You're not contraindicated. That being said, if you are COVID or if you're SARS-CoV-2 positive, we do want you to stay at home so you don't infect others.
But their idea is that they would have it, not know it kind of situation. But you're saying that the reason for isolation there is not to keep from spreading it, not because getting the vaccine would be an issue.
Exactly. And I guarantee you, based on percentages, we have vaccinated people that are SARS-CoV-2 positive and asymptomatic. It's not an issue.
Okay. By the stats, so the number of cases out there, by the number of people y'all have had come through, statistically, you think that situation has happened?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
And once again, the numbers here, we go back, and you and I talked about this during one of the breaks, the numbers of vaccinations. While y'all and other groups have been doing your darndest now, and now that you can get supply, getting people vaccinated, we're still at a pretty low number as per the percentage of the whole county, right?
Right. So for Mobile County, we vaccinated about 144,000 people. And the number of people that have received one or more doses is about 89,000, 90,000. Those that have completed their series is right at 55,000. So remember, 55,000 completed vaccinations. We got to get to about 330,000 in Mobile County to reach that concept threshold of herd immunity. So when we talked about this next wave potentially coming, the vaccine, the virus doesn't care. I mean, it hasn't changed. Only these people, these 55,000 that have been fully vaccinated, as well as those that have some natural immunity, are isolated and from infection. And that is well below what we need to be at so that we don't have these new spots.
And the idea with herd immunity, Lord knows, that was the phrase of 2020 and now 2021, herd immunity. It doesn't mean that everybody is immune, correct? I mean, the idea of herd immunity is what?
Basically, you put enough people between an infected person and somebody that's susceptible so that the infected person doesn't infect the susceptible person. And it's basically having a bunch of immune people around because there are going to be people that cannot receive the vaccine for one reason or another. Or don't complete their series, or our children that are not eligible right now. So it's very, very important, and important for all vaccines, that we maintain herd immunity so we reduce community transmission. So the reduction of community transmission is what herd immunity is all about.
Right. We had maybe time for one more. Somebody saying, with these numbers, when we hit herd immunity, will we have to wear masks?
No.
No.
You can go back to normal.
Okay. So at herd immunity, there's some kind of carrot at the end of this. I mean, on the 9th of April, it won't be mandated here in the state of Alabama, but I imagine Mobile County Health Department is still going to be pushing for people to wear masks at that point.
Right. Good. And it's going to be personal responsibility when you're in situations that either you're susceptible, either for acquiring or transmitting, you should still wear a mask. And here in my household, we've already talked about what, even being fully vaccinated, where those places are going to be.
We need to get, for so many reasons, get on the other side of this. The one flippant reason is that I could then use the mask as a Halloween costume going forward, and I could say, it's my pandemic costume, but not until we get past it can I bring the mask back. So I appreciate your work. And listen, we'll check back in with you, and folks, hopefully we'll see y'all in person down at the cruise terminal all this week.
All right. Yeah, come see us.
Dr. Chavers, appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Sean.
Hey, it's Dr. Scott Chavers, and we're wrapping it up for this Tuesday edition of Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.